This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Let's understand the problem with this gun control bill that they're trying to push through. Now, you have to realize that when you are somebody who fights for liberty, you have to sometimes be on the side of the dreaded what-if scenario. You have to be against the what-if scenario because that happens all the time. You know, you say, well, I don't think they should spy on us. Well, yeah, but what if, you know, a terrorist is blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't think they should just be able to take our cash and our cars. Yeah, but what if that person's a drug dealer? And you go on and on like this. And so now it's, well, I don't think they should just be able to just have the police come to my home and take my weapons. Yeah, but what if that person's about to shoot up a school? And so when you play the what if game, if you can listen to their scenarios of what if, and the big what if monster, and you go along with that, and all of a sudden you turn around and you realize now you've given up liberty, you've allowed the government to spy on you, you've given up your Second Amendment rights too, all under the guise of keeping me safe. And as the old quote says, you know, anybody who thinks they're giving up liberty for safety is going to find they have neither. So here's the deal with regards to a couple different things here. Number one are these red flag laws. Red flag laws are incredibly problematic, and I think that they are absolutely unconstitutional. It sounds good, though, right? Doesn't it? Sounds good. We think somebody's crazy, so we're going to come and take their guns. Red flag laws, as one pro-Second Amendment group put it, incentivizes local disarmament proceedings, of which many states currently employ secret ex parte hearings, meaning you're not allowed there. You have no counsel. You're not allowed to actually enter a proper defense. It's ex parte. Calls only for standards equivalent only to civil court. They're going to take your property. In my opinion, there has to be a criminal conviction for it. But when you use a civil court standard, it's very different, obviously. For all the bluster and the measures about protecting due process and the constitutional rights of the subjects of the hearings during the appropriate phase, it implies that states will still be able to hold secret ex parte hearings to deprive the people of their rights and entitles a subject to an attorney at the appropriate phase, but it must be at the subject's expense. So in other words, let's see how this plays out, right? So Billy and Jane break up. Jane doesn't like Billy anymore. Jane calls the cops on Billy and says, Billy's really upset that I dumped him. And he's got a lot of firepower there, and I think he's going to hurt somebody. And now they go and they initiate a red flag proceeding. So they go to court. They get a judge to sign off on this. That's apparently due process. You know, the local law enforcement, local police, or whoever calls up a judge, they go to a room. And you can have a defense counsel present theoretically, but then you got to pay for a lawyer who's going to go, and they're going to sign off on it anyway because, well, Your Honor, we have it on great authority that this man is a danger to himself and his community. All right, go get his guns. Now, how does that process work exactly? Now, they've said now, go get his guns. Do you think Barney Fife shows up in this day and age when everybody's afraid of knocks on the door? Hey, sir, how are you? Here to take your guns. No big deal. Just, you know, you're red flagged. So, or do you think law enforcement, knowing that this person could be unstable and has a lot of guns, is maybe going to show up with some firepower? Which scenario do you think is more likely to play out? A, where they just politely knock on the door. Hey, how are you? You mind if your trunk's open? You load up your guns into the car and, you know, or B, which is they show up with probably the SWAT team. Because you're dealing with somebody who might be unstable and has guns. So now you've created a very, very, very tense situation right there. Now they come and they confiscate your weapons and you hand them over. Now you gotta go through the process of getting them back. It's not on the state. You know, the onus is not on them. The onus is on you. So now you gotta prove you're not crazy to get your guns back. Now, I know that sounds like, well, no big deal because, hey, you know, if we can stop one school shooting, if we can save one life. But here's the real question that I've always asked with these red flag laws. You go to the house, you show up, you're the cops. You say, we need your weapons. We got a court order here. Give us your weapons. This is your due process. Let's go. Guy turns him over. While you're there, you notice the guy has a collection of axes. You know, he does axe throwing on the weekends. He's a big axe thrower, you know. Guy's got a big... big Ford F-150 in the driveway. You know, there's one guy turned to the sergeant and go, hey, Sarge, do we take his keys? That guy's got a liquor cabinet over here. We just said this guy's nuts. Now we're taking all his guns. He's not happy with us. Is it okay to leave him here by himself? I've always wondered that. You know what I mean? Is that okay to just let people, you know, you just, all right, good luck. It sounds like a recipe for disaster to me. There's all kinds of weapons in the house. We always focus on the guns, but you've just determined this person now might be certifiable, and you're leaving him with all this stuff. And you're it's like, hey, Sarge, you guys got a 5-gallon gas tank out back. You know, should we confiscate that too? No. We only have the order for the guns. That's it. Sir, he's got machetes. Well, you know, got a chainsaw in the backyard. Well, you know, got this is it. Just the guns. Everything else is fine. Okay. This bill also has a number of other things in there, too. But you have to realize that these red flag laws become really problematic. The bill, which is the product of negotiations between Democrats and Republicans who want to be seen as doing something to prevent mass shootings and other kinds of gun violence, purports to achieve that goal without sacrificing Second Amendment rights. But the bill's details raise serious questions about its effectiveness and fairness. It pays lip service to civil liberties while canceling the gun rights of adults based on juvenile records. And it subsidizes state laws that suspend those rights without due process. The bill requires background checks for 18 to 20-year-olds who buy guns from federally licensed dealers. Then they must include juvenile, criminal, and psychiatric records. Okay? Now, they must know if the person has anything in their background. The main rationale is that it could be an obstacle for young mass murderers with disqualifying juvenile records. You know, obviously, if you look at what happened May 14th in Buffalo, New York, and in Uvalde, Texas, these were both 18-year-olds who legally bought firearms after passing background checks. But it does not look like those sales would have been blocked even if the background checks had included juvenile records. Okay? But the question becomes this. What happens, though, if you have stuff in your background when you were a dumb kid and now you're an adult? Do you lose your Second Amendment rights for the rest of your life? What happens there? And also, does it really stop somebody from getting a gun who wants to do something bad? The 17-year-old charged with murdering 10 people at Santa Fe, Texas High School in 2018 used his father's guns, so there was no background check for him to fail. The 20-year-old who killed 20 children and 6 adults at a Newtown, Connecticut elementary school in 2012 obtained the rifle he used from his mother. The perpetrators of Columbine obtained firearms through older kids and other people like that. The 19-year-old who killed 17 people at Parkland had a history of disturbing behavior, and he had received mental health treatment. But a 2013 psychiatric evaluation under Florida's Baker Act concluded that he did not meet the criteria for commitment. The Associated Press reported that he did not have a criminal record before the shooting. So the policy becomes inconsistent with the general principle that people who commit crimes as minors should not be followed by that record as adults their whole life. You know, even Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez made that point earlier, saying that she was concerned about the expansion of background checks into juvenile records. The Bipartisan Safer Communities Act not only blocks gun sales to young adults with disqualifying juvenile records, it permanently strips them of their Second Amendment rights, adding the phrase, quote, including as a juvenile, to the list of criteria that makes gun sales to certain buyers illegal. Now, I guess the other question, too, is that if you know that these guns, the most of the crimes are being committed on the streets by teenagers, none of them are passing background checks, is it really then the gun or is it the criminal on the streets? Because it seems like you're going to put a whole lot of effort into this. And people who might have had something bad in their background, and for the rest of their lives now, they're going to be punished and not have their Second Amendment rights. A teenager is convicted of a crime punishable by more than a year of incarceration would not be allowed to buy firearms as an adult, ever. Likewise, for a teenager who is subjected to involuntary psychiatric treatment, provided that happened at 16 years of age or older, will never be allowed to ever have a firearm ever again. Now, are we then maligning people who have psychiatric issues? Should anyone who's ever had a psychiatric issue be deprived of their Second Amendment rights? Like, for example, I mean, what if you're on an antidepressant? What if you take a stimulant? What if you take sleeping pills? I mean, how far down do we go with this? You know, if somebody was 16 years old, was depressed, for example, and they put him into a facility for a couple days, and then they got the person on drugs and doing great and everything like that, should that person never be allowed to ever own a firearm? And then the question is, should that person ever be allowed to do certain things in life? I mean, is this discrimination against people who might have mental health issues? How do you make that determination? I don't know. If a guy gets divorced from his wife and he's very depressed and he takes antidepressants, should that be a disqualifier too? See, when you go down this road of mental health, the question becomes, are you actually going to put in a disincentive for people to come out and speak up if they are feeling depressed or stressed or have anxiety, knowing that they're going to be flagged now if they were to ever, say, go to buy a gun? Would they then not seek treatment for that? Are you creating another layer of disincentive for people to get the help that they need? I don't know, but it certainly looks like it could be. The policy looks even more questionable when you compare it to the bill's treatment of the so-called boyfriend loophole. Under current law, people are prohibited from owning guns if they have been convicted of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence against an intimate partner. The latter phrase is defined to include a current or former spouse, a current or former cohabitant, and a parent of the misdemeanant's child. This act expands the definition to include participants in a current or recent former dating relationship. In other words, what this does is it expands two things. It does not apply to domestic violence misdemeanors committed before the law takes effect, but it does not extend the time limit already covered under the domestic violence provision. Basically, it's like this. Boyfriends, even if they've committed domestic violence, will get their Second Amendment rights back after 5 years, but only if they've never lived with their victims, married them, or produced children with them. So let's think about it like this. There's a relationship where a guy beats up a woman. 5 years later, he loses his rights to a gun, but 5 years later, he can get them back, but only if he's no longer with her. So let's say they had a domestic violence situation, but then they worked it out and they got married. They had kids. Everything's going great. That guy still can never get his guns ever again. So the question is this. How long do we punish people for things in their past when it comes to their rights? Do we ever restore their rights? You know, there's a movement in this country right now to restore voting rights for people who have been incarcerated, to restore Second Amendment rights. If you've done your time, you should get all your rights back. There's movements like this. The question, of course, is, should you ever get your rights back if any of these things have ever happened to you? Or should you be barred for the rest of your life from ever being able to own a firearm? This bill is very, very strict on those things. And then, of course, the red flag laws, which I've talked about in great detail as well. The bill says respondents must have the right to be represented by counsel at no expense to the government. That means states have no legal obligation to provide counsel for respondents who cannot afford to pay a lawyer, leaving them to navigate a complicated and daunting process on their own. In other words, if you have your guns taken from you, you have the right to counsel, but you got to pay for it. Remember, in a criminal proceeding, if you can't afford an attorney, one will be provided to you by the state. Not in this context. The government's come. They bash through your door. They got your guns. Now you got to hire an attorney. You got to go to court. You got to do all the work to get your guns back. The onus is not on the state. The state does not have to prove you are a threat. You have to prove you aren't a threat to get them back. So it absolutely is a confiscation of weapons, no question about it, with zero due process. This absolutely is nothing about what the Fourth Amendment would allow or protect you from, the Fifth Amendment or the Sixth Amendment. This legislation would absolutely cause people for the rest of their lives to lose their Second Amendment rights. And this legislation would empower the government to have the ability to come into your home and take your legal property without any due process whatsoever. Because the due process that they're outlining here is a joke. It's a kangaroo court. And that is why this bill is so incredibly problematic.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.